This is The Artist's Response with Elizabeth Stewart, and you're welcome to join us. Please stay tuned for a program produced by Richard Dugan and researched and presented by Elizabeth Stewart, who welcomes the great artists of our community. What follows is a conversation of an artist's experience about the artist's response to trying times, creativity, reinvention, recovery, and of course, flexibility, which is in fact the narrative of our present time.
Hello, hello, Santa Barbara. It's your Chantress of everything valuable and beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. And this is a follow-up to one of the favorite conversations I've had in a long, long time. I have Mona Kuhn, a wonderful international artist with us, and Sylvia Perea, who is Mona's curator. And the exhibition is at the Our University Art and Architecture Museum. And the exhibition is called 835 Kings Road. And we talked a little bit about the exhibition and why it was so important and how I was encouraging everybody to come and take a look at it. And I want to talk a little further. And I wonder, Sylvia, I wonder if we can start the conversation by maybe bringing us some information on how people are looking at this. What the crowds have been saying about it. And like I say, Sylvia is Mona's curator. So for this exhibition, I should say. So Sylvia, what have people been saying?
Well, the reactions have been great so far because this is an exhibition that is interdisciplinary, that in a way it's presenting architecture in a new way, and it's presenting photography in a new way. So people are surprised to see how both things have come together to enrich each other in a way. So the architecture is suggested by the installation, which is a series of screens that conform a kind of an enclosed space on which the photographs of Mona are projected. And the type of fabric that we have used for those screens is such that lets the images not only be retained in the screens, but also that let the images go through and invade the surrounding space. So it's a pretty immersive spatial experience, which really connects to the way in which Rudolf Schindler, the architect of the house that Mona has photographed, and that is located at 835 Kings Road, really thought about when he was conceiving his house. He was conceiving his architecture as an experience. And that's something that we wanted to echo in this exhibition. So, you know, it's very engaging. It's very participatory. People can go around the screen. Their shadows can be part of Mona's photographs. There are plenty of interesting views as you go around the installation. You see the images overlapping. And so it provides a multiplicity of visions that people are, you know, engaged in discovering. And they say, well, we've never seen such a thing. So reactions have been very, very good so far.
Well, thank you for that. And I want to switch over to Mona for a question I have. You know, in the description of the show, there's a specific line that it just caught my attention. And I wonder, as an artist, if you can sort of tell us more about this process. It says, enhancing the poetic essence of this fiction is its spatial breath. And we're talking about a fiction, but it's captured with probably the most documentary ready medium, which is photography. And so I want you to talk through, maybe Mona, you can talk us through how a photographer creates a fiction, maybe from the start of your inspiration to actually the application and the use of the media.
Oh, okay. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hey, so, Mona.
Hi. So in all of my works, I have tried to create and use photography in a way elevating, not so much photography as a documentary, not so much photography, recording what we already see with our eyes out there, but I wanted to suspend it into what I call it to be like a parallel reality. So I usually in my previous works, I usually don't necessarily say where they were taking or the location is not so important for me because I want it to be in a way to reveal itself to the viewer in their own imagination. Specifically in this project, the A35 Kings Road, the location is the only thing that is firmed on the ground. That's the house that Rudolf Schindler built in West Hollywood. And that is the house that I fell in love when I entered. And I started learning more about it. And one of the incredible resources is to go to the archive, architectural archive at UCSB, and be able to look at everything that happened in the house from a historical point of view, from a record point of view, but then also on my personal creative process to try to abstract and bring it to this parallel reality, which I bring along from my background into. So it was the moment that I found this love letter, which is actually a breakup letter, that I found a little path that I could carve in where I could start creating a fiction. And my fiction really was a bit of a Shakespearean idea of bringing these two people together. Now with the remainings of what we have from Rudolf Schindler, which is the archives, which are the handwritten notes and all of the correspondence of the time in the around 1920s, and his home. So in a way, I started seeing his home as the remaining of him, of what we have. A lot of those walls are poured concrete. So when the concrete comes together, there are wrinkles in the concrete that reminded me of the body, of wrinkles in your skin. There were veins on the redwood tree that he used in a very raw presentation in his architecture that looked like veins of the body. So immediately I felt that I was in his body. And now what I needed to do was create a person that can come and meet him. And how do I do that with photography in a way that I make two people meet again? And that idea of crossing the time, because both of them are gone, and crossing space, because we're talking about space architecture. So my solution was to photograph a person. In reality, is a person that I know. I have worked with her in the past. We have established and trustworthy relationship. And later on, what I did, I solarized the images that I did of her. And solarization is a photographic technique developed in the 1920s. It's part of the photo surrealism. Interesting enough, until 1920s, photography was used as a mechanism of recording reality, of documenting. And it is with solarization that for the first time, the artist in Paris at the time where the artist started saying, oh, wow, look at what's happening. Look at these lines and look at the dematerialization and the oxidation of the silver. This is the first time that artists and colleagues at the time started recognizing photography as an art form that does not have to be limited to record keeping. So it was also, aside from the correlation with the timing of when this house was built, it was also a way for me to photograph a person in the nude that is not so blunt, is not so gratuitous. It's layered with the being black and white, being solarized, and also is layered with elements where partially her skin is rendered in the process in a way that is very tactile. You can almost touch her skin or you can feel her skin, and other parts of the photo or the portraits of her are completely dematerialized, which is exactly what I wanted. I wanted her to cross the realm.
When you work, now you mentioned you work with somebody that is your model that you've worked with before.
Yes.
So, you know, you're putting her in a frame of mind. And this is my question, you know, as a photographer, how do you make your model understand what you want? And in specific, you know, When I saw the exhibition, I was struck by the idea that the model had a sense of longing about her.
Right.
And so, you know, how are you, what's your prep work with your model? Yeah.
So first of all, I find that my best work is when I engage with people that I already know, that we have a certain established relationship. So they know in being photographed by me and knowing that it will be photographs of nudes, they know that my best work starts when we both of us forget that someone is naked. So that's when there's that freedom of the mind and freedom of the creativity. I also try to bring to certain projects people that are interested on that, creative minds of their own. For example, the person that I photograph for this project, she is finishing her PhD in psychology. So it's already someone interested on the theme and on this crossing of elements. So she was also someone interested in architecture. So as we talked a lot and we evolved the conversation, I really share where I'm coming from. I share the stories of Schindler. She was very interested in it as well. So when we finally got to the house and we are there together and we are photographing, let's just say we had a day for ourselves there. At that moment, we are really imagining how is it, how was it to be there? We, during the process of photographing, we were imagining how was this house full of people? How was this place? How was it if she could have entered and visited him? Or what was he thinking knowing that he couldn't be with her while he was roaming around in the house? Did he have her in her thoughts? And I think that that's why the final images become a little bit more pensive and a little bit more, suspenseful, a little bit more gentle. And you're right that there is a lot of a certain nostalgia to it.
You know, the reason that I found that so interesting, Mona, and a little bit about my background. So I was in ballet for years, and I danced in Balanchine companies. And many times, if it was if the director, the artistic director, had a direct link to Mr. B, the director took no clues, no suggestions, nothing from the dancers. It was the geometry of the dance, and her or his opinion of how Mr. B would do it, forget about having an opinion as an artist, as a dancer.
Yeah.
So it was an interesting thing to think about your relationship with your model. So how much you take clues from, you know, a highly intelligent, sensitive,
right,
you know, right, model, and how much you say, this is my thing.
Yes.
You know, this is what
yes.
I want.
So I don't like imposing so much, because I think that in a way on my creative process, I think when we try too hard, we start strangling that idea and it becomes stiff and it becomes, and the oxygen is gone and the life is gone, in my personal opinion. So for me, it's really important. I give a certain parenthesis, because we cannot just do anything, right? So I do give a certain parenthesis. This is the story. This is the foundation. This is the project we're working with. These are the parameters. But within the parenthesis, I find it to be absolutely rewarding to be able to collaborate and allow a certain osmosis of ideas, allow oxygen in the air, and really nothing can go wrong. If some idea did not work out, we can take care of that on editing later. So I don't like, I can edit things later. I don't like to be too stiff during the creating of the images. It's a little bit like if you would imagine pottery, you need to be free to move in different ways and allow it to form itself. And then later on, if we had really horrible ideas, I can always edit it out. But it's not good to bring that critical thinking in the making of.
So, yeah, and I also wanted to ask you, you know, regards to that, you know, you worked with a wonderful musician on this. So Boris Salchow was your musician. Yes. And the same question applies. You know, if how do you collaborate then with such a mind? What is your direction? And Richard's giving us a sign. We got to go to quick break. So when we get back from the break, I'd love to. And then I'm going to just give you a clue as to the next question. And I want Sylvia's help with this. In my world as an appraiser of art, I run into a lot of artists and I do a lot of studio visits. So I'm seeing works in progress, Mona. And I'm struck by this one question that I'd like for you to answer after we talk about the music. When does an artist know when to stop?
I'm happy to answer.
Yeah. Hey, Richard.
Yes,
let's go to quick break. And I'm just reintroducing, speaking with the internationally recognized wonderful photographer Mona Kuhn and Sylvia Perea. Sylvia is the curator of the show at the Art and Architecture Museum at UC Santa Barbara, 835 Kings Road. I just can't say enough about it. Don't turn that dial. Back in a minute. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart, and I'm speaking with Mona Kuhn, photographer, artist, genius mind, and Sylvia Perea, who curated the show 835 Kings Road at UC Santa Barbara. And I asked Mona before the break if she would talk a little bit about her relationship with the model that she used as the love interest, who's sort of encased, embodied, one with the architecture, and the architect is the other love interest, although you might say there's three love interests here, which are the house, the woman, and the man. And I asked how much Mona, as the artist, responds to her model, who is also an artist in her own right. And now I'm going to go a little further and ask Mona how she handles working in collaboration with the composer Boris Salchow, who did the music for the show. Who is guiding that ship, Mona?
Right. So working with composer Boris Salchow for me was a big luxury, because in photography, we usually don't incorporate music. So this was a really significant step for me. And I had to hear first the clues from the composer. And he said in his own creative process, he likes to receive the final imaging as if it was a short movie. So once we put the imaging together, then I send it to him. And at first, he wanted to give it a certain musical treatment. We had the conversation of where we wanted it to go. And he said, well, allow me a few weeks. Let me settle my thoughts. Let me play around with different instruments and understand the arch, a wide arch over the entire piece. The entire piece is 15 minutes. And then once he had a little bit of a handle on that, and I had to, of course, respect his creative process, once he got the base formed, then we sat down together and we then went minute by minute, either adjusting a little bit because I might have had a different idea about it and we wanted to push in different directions, or there were some parts towards the very end that we liked that we wanted to bring to the beginning. So we massaged it together with my advice and his advice and his technical, of course, ability to put into practice what the emotions that I wanted to convey. So I would say that the first one third was very much his own reaction and response to the work, to the images. And then I would say that two thirds of it was our combined collaboration. There were a couple of things that were really important to both of us, being a love story, we did not want it to be overly romantic or to be overly saccharine, the way I say that. Also, considering that it is in a museum, and I have been to various video installations where the music could be a little bit edgy or stringent. So we knew what we wanted to avoid. And from knowing what we wanted to avoid, we kind of found a common path. And the common path was to have something that is gentle, something mysterious, something suspenseful, something also that is easy, that allows the viewer to stay there for quite some time. Was also important to use the spatial, the ideas that Sylvia and I had together about presenting the works in relationship to architecture of space. We wanted to bring that as well to the sound, so that we had Sylvia really did this for speakers, so that we can use multiple channels and the sound can come from different areas, enhancing the idea of space in the room. So all of that was for me a very luxurious way. And I also learned so much because I was able to see from the technical point of view, how the composer works, how they finesse and adjust the sound. And I was also there when he recorded strings or pianos or a Japanese instrument that we brought in. So it was a real pleasure, I have to say.
And then, you know, I want to extend this a little further and ask Sylvia, you know, we talked about the relationship with other artists and collaborations and how far Mona drove the ship of the show. Now let's switch to Sylvia, who's mounting the show. So what's that like? Because it's your, you know, it's your space, Sylvia. Now you're collaborating with the artist to build that artist vision. So talk me through that.
Yeah, I mean, there are five people, especially, I mean, many, plenty of collaborators, but especially five people who have contributed to the exhibition with their expertise and creative minds. And so we have all learned from each other. None of us had the expertise of the other. And so it's been kind of my role has been that of a conductor almost, you know, coordinating people and bringing their ideas in to the installation and seeing how we could reduce it all together. It's been a learning curve for all of us, but knowing that what the goal was, we have all worked tremendously well. I mean, it's been a so enriching experience for all of us. And it's been very organic, very fluid, because each of us knew what we had to do in a way. So I think that coordination has been essential, so that we all knew what we had to do and contributed in the best way possible. So we've been collaborating with a set designer, for example, who's a professor here on campus who teaches set design, and he has done a lot of operas and designs for operas. So he helped us with all the technical aspects of the installation. The composer, Boris Salcho, of course, contributed the music. And then a visual artist who put together the images with Mona's supervision and who created kind of the animation that is projected onto the screens. My role was more of the envisioning kind of the scholarly aspect of the exhibition and bringing Schindler and Mona together through the understanding of space as a creative matter. And presenting that in a way, or translating that in a way that was subtle, but also, you know, that people could feel that there was a connection between how the house was conceived and how Mona has approached it, creatively speaking.
Well, thank you for that. Richard's giving us a sign we have to go to quick break. And then I want to address this question for Mona, which is how, you know, I'm getting the sense there's many moving parts. And, you know, along the line of the creative arc, how do you say, okay, it's done, Mona? Yeah. When we get back from the break, let's address that thorny question. And just reintroducing, I'm here with Sylvia Perea, curator of the show 835 Kings Road, and the artist behind the show, Mona Kuhn. Back in a minute. Don't turn that down. Welcome back. I'm speaking with Sylvia Perea, the curator of the show at UC Santa Barbara Art and Architecture Museum, and the artist Mona Kuhn. And part of what Sylvia was saying is the scholar behind the show. I'm referring to a paper that Sylvia wrote in which she quotes the architect Schindler. The architect himself considered that modern architecture stripped down the mind and body of its users from past burdens. Quote, the house and the dress of the future will give us control of our environment without interfering with our mental and physical nakedness. How cool is that? And the house addresses physical nakedness, which is, of course, is what Mona's talking about and portraying. And the idea that we were talking about in the beginning of the show, all the collaborative moving parts of the show, not to mention the model, the composer, the five staff members, and professors at the museum that are helping to mount the show. Mona, how do you call stop on such a thing?
That's a great question. There's very in behind the scenes on the. On the part of capturing as a photographer, there's many elements to it that came together on this process. So I had the permission of the Max Center to photograph the Schindler House in between exhibitions because the space is used for exhibitions. So I was able to go back or go to the house and photograph it. And I would photograph the house from many angles, from also very seasons. I did it over a period of maybe 3 years. And I was able to have, you know, the light entering the house in different seasons, creating different lines within the architecture. So all of that I was able to observe over, let's just say, 4 seasons. And I really took advantage of the changes of the lighting in the house. So I think that moment I realized I did enough when I started seeing that things are repeating themselves. But then again, you have to go through those 4 seasons. Then I got another set of permission to actually photograph photograph with a person, to come back to the house and photograph the person. Now, that one, we had maybe a couple of days or a few days that we were able to do it. So it was limited by the time allowed for me and for her to be in the house. Nonetheless, we had enough time to create a lot. And even on the last day that we had permission to be there, we were repeating a little bit ourselves. So I think that in general, in image making, as an artist, you know it's coming to an end, or you know that your hunger to look for something new is coming to an end because there is a diminishing scale of how many new images are you actually creating, and you understand the pivot where you start repeating yourself. Now, the other part that was part of this project was coming to the archives at UCSB and looking at all of the material. And that was endless because I had plenty of permission to look at everything. And the stories around this house are, you know, it's such a fertile record and archive. Schindler had it's so rich, the story of him as an architect and everything surrounding him. There are a multiplicity of things that can be explored on the archive. I actually got at some point even overwhelmed because there were so many interesting things. I really had to at some point narrow it to a time frame. So I wanted it to be the archive material that was maybe between 1910 and 1930, because the house was built in 1920, 1922. And I kind of wanted to give myself the limit of time. And then I also eventually, after being seduced by many great things in this archive, I eventually had to give up of my temptations and narrow it to what I believe was important to my project, which was the handwritten correspondence, his handwriting. It was the intimacy of not the content of the letters, but of the record itself. And so I kind of slowly found my path to something that was related to what I wanted to say to my visual vocabulary.
Well, thank you for that. That is amazing. And the research that was done in the four seasons, I had no idea. My next question is for Sylvia. Sylvia has a wonderful sort of cheat sheet on some of the influences on Schindler. Adolph Loos, we were talking, Sylvia's writing about Adolph and Schindler, it's sort of in a coffee clutch situation in Vienna. And then he writes that, Loos writes in Die Fackel in 1908, he referred to architecture as an art of space and form influenced by sculpture. Now we switch very quickly, and this is the crux of my question, to Schindler, quoted in Sylvia's paperwork. Architecture is spatial art, and therefore it only has to do with bodies indirectly. Spaces are limited by flat areas that differ in texture and color. Spatial shape, texture, and color are actually everything that concerns architects. Line is always a flat ornament, therefore unimportant. Mass form equals sculpture is the opposite of architecture. Mm-hmm. And that it struck me very interesting that he's reacting to something in Lou's thought. Mm-hmm. And I wonder maybe when Richard's giving us time, we have to go to quick break. When we get back from the break, I'd love it if you could explain that, especially in the light that you felt it was very important to emphasize that sense of embodiedness for the show for H35 Kings Road. So, hey, Richard, let's go to quick break. Just reintroducing, I'm speaking with Mona Kuhn and Sylvia Perea. We're talking about the show at UC Santa Barbara's Art and Architecture Museum, 835 Kings Road, which is the address of a house that captivated Mona that was done in the 20s by Rudolf Schindler. Don't turn that dial. Back in a minute. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. I'm speaking with Mona Kuhn, featured artist, 835 Kings Road at UC Santa Barbara's Art and Architecture Museum, and also the curator of the show, Sylvia Perea, is with us. And I asked Sylvia to reflect a little bit about the idea of sculpture, you know, and it just a little throwback, you know, why I thought about that question was because, you know, from the onset of sculpture, the human form, usually unclothed, that's where sculpture started. So it's kind of a continuum here. And Sylvia, would you reflect on this idea of sculpture as architecture?
Right. So Rudolf Schindler was born in the Vienna fin de siècle, when Vienna was kind of the cultural epicenter of Europe, with all the creative minds that were living there and exchanging ideas. It was very progressive. You can think of Freud, but also Egon Schiele and Klimt and the secessionist movement and Kokoschka. I mean, it was very fertile from the creative point of view. And so the spirit that dominated the arts was that of breaking away with the past. And the architecture of the past was very sculptural, was very much focused on the facade. Architects were kind of driven by the idea of the appearance. They had to create an identity through the facade. And so these creative minds were all reacting against that kind of inheritance. And in Rudolf Schindler, who trained under Adolf Loos, who was one of these very progressive architects, was very influenced by his thought. And his idea of architecture revolved around the concept of understanding space, around the idea of space rather than the mass. So the mass would be the facade, would be the walls, would be that old concept of architecture being the facade, the mask. And Schindler instead thought that space should be the focus of the architect, because it was not predetermined, because space is something we don't see. And therefore, you know, creating something with the space is already creative. It's something innovative already. So in his house, you know, these concepts translates, for example, in the conception of studios. Rather than having a house with a kitchen, a dining room, a sitting room, a library, he's conceiving just a space, which he calls studio, where everything could happen, from dining to entertaining to sleeping to working. Nothing in that space is predicting what the use is going to be. And that's very interesting. As you enter the house, you also feel that the space is moving. Everything is becoming, as Esther McCoy used to put it. Everything in the house seems to be fluent, right? Your eye never stops. So it's always bumping from one side to the other because light is coming from so many other parts. And that's something that is replicated in the installation with these three screens. So your eye is bumping from one screen to the other in a way as to evoke that play of spaces with which Schindler conceived his house. So for him, sculpture was something that had to do with the walls and with the appearance. In his house is nothing about that. His house is very simple, is very modest. He never covered concrete. He never painted the concrete. He is using red wood in a raw as a raw material without painting it or varnishing it. So you know, that has to do with a concept, kind of an opposite concept to that of the facade and in the appearance.
Well, thank you for explaining. That makes a lot more sense to me now. And my next question is for Mona. Mona, when we talk about some of the wonderful articles that Sylvia's written for the show, she mentions that in some way, when you had your intimate experience with the house, 835 Kings Road, you felt very much at home. And there was a certain nostalgia there that Sylvia writes about. Your experience of coming home, literally to this home. And I wonder if you tell us why you felt you were coming home.
Yeah. So when I first entered the house, I felt this incredible sense of familiarity with the space. I didn't know exactly where it was coming from, but it was enough to draw me to try to find that out, right? And I realized as I was thinking more about it, or I went back to the house a few times, I realized that it was maybe some conversations that I would have with my grandparents. So my grandparents came from Germany, they moved to Brazil. I was born and raised in Brazil. And when you move countries with your family, there are so many conversations that are this compare and contrast of cultures, of how you do things in one way, how you do in another way. My grandparents at the time were also pretty progressive and very social. I think that there is a spirit of Schindler, like if they would be alive, I think they could have become friends, for example. There are certain aspects that Schindler brought in, like a certain a bareness of elements or a certain a way of bringing the inside and the outside together that I experienced in the house of my grandparents when I was a child. And I think that subconsciously it stayed there. It felt very familiar when I first entered the house. And then later on, as I started researching about the house, I realized that he was having those conversations with his colleagues back and forth between architecture in Vienna versus architecture in the US, building with a supportive system like capitalism versus building in a society that it's a little bit more socialist. So he was not necessarily saying one is better than the other. He was just basically comparing paradigms and the advantage of each side. And I think that's exactly how I grew up, constantly this comparison between cultures, which I find to be very fruitful and very, very interesting. There was also a certain naturalness. Many times people ask me at the very beginning, why do you do nudes? And the reason I'm bringing it up is because I used to go from Brazil. At some point, my grandparents went back to Germany, and I would then, every 2 years or whenever possible, I would visit them. And it would usually be summertime in the northern hemisphere in Germany. And nonetheless, in Germany, it remains kind of cloudy. It's continental weather, and it's cloudy, and everyone is kind of like a little bit moody. But as soon as the sun would shine through the clouds, my grandparents would run to the little backyard and would bring the newspaper with them and would lay themselves naked in the lounge chair. And they would look back at me and they would say, Mona, what are you doing inside the house? Undress and come outside and absorb the sun. This is healthy. So that is my introduction to nudity. So in a way, it was always felt very familiar and very natural. And I felt that things that happen in the Schindler house here in West Hollywood had a little bit of those elements coming together.
So, hey, Richard, let's go to quick break. Just reintroducing, I'm speaking with Mona Kuhn and Sylvia Perea. We're talking about the show at UC Santa Barbara's Art and Architecture Museum, 835 Kings Road, which is the address of a house that captivated Mona, that was done in the 20s by Rudolf Schindler. Don't turn that dial. Back in a minute. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. I'm speaking with Mona Kuhn, featured artist, 835 Kings Road at UC Santa Barbara's Art and Architecture. Okay, so I'm just reintroducing. I'm here with Mona Kuhn, the wonderful artist that's behind the show 835 Kings Road at UC Santa Barbara, the Art and Architecture Museum. And my final question is for Mona. And that's that when Schindler built the house, the presumption was that two families would share the dwelling. And, you know, you talked about, you know, the evocative nature of the building and how, you know, your grandparents were part of the process and the richness of that. It's almost like you heard their voice, your grandparents' voice in the house. Did you hear the other family's voice?
Well, Elizabeth, I love that you're asking me those questions because it really enters the world of more emotional and subjective, right? I think that in a more esoteric explanation of it, more like my personal artistic thoughts with myself, I did not necessarily specifically hear the voices of the other couple that lived with Schindler and Pauline, but I felt that it was a very socially happy environment, and I felt that people were welcomed, and people of different cultures, different backgrounds, different opinions were coming together to be together and to exchange all of that. Because imagine in 1920s, so much was happening around the world, and I think they found solace in being able to communicate and be together there. So I felt a certain warmth, almost like a womb. Like I felt that it was a place where you could come as you are.
Well, that helps me understand. The story about your grandparents. It's so interesting that how our grandparents' idea of our grandparents' home affects all of our psyches in a really, really profound way. This is just amazing. Well, anyway, 835 Kings Road, currently up at the Art and Architecture Museum at UC Santa Barbara. And thank you, Mona and Sylvia, yet again for telling us a little more about the exhibition. I really appreciate your time. Thanks, Richard.
Thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Oh, yeah, it's great to see you guys, and thanks a lot for joining us. Sorry for the confusion on the time.